We are continuing in our narrative lectionary series, and I need to say two things first. First, I have a question. Hosea. Raise your hand if you're really familiar with the story of Hosea. Okay, good. This is good, because it's not a household name. Could be. The second part is, yes, as I do the reading, you're going to recognize at the very end, there are a couple place names that make no sense unless that you're told what they are. I had to look them up. At the end of the passage, it talks about the city of Adma and the city of Zeboim. And it turns out those were more or less sister cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. So we talk about Sodom and Gomorrah, and we know about the destruction that was wrought upon them for their sinfulness. There were, I think, maybe six cities that were involved in that conflagration, whatever that might have been. But it didn't go well for the folks of Adma and Zeboim. So we'll know that ahead of time. So open your hearts and your ears now for these words from the 11th chapter of the prophet Hosea. When Israel was a child, I loved him. And out of Egypt, I called my lad. The more I called them, the more they went from me. They kept sacrificing to the Baals, the offering incense to idols. Yet it was I who taught Ephraim to walk. I took them up in my arms, but they did not know that I healed them. I led them with cords of human kindness, with bands of love. I was to them like those who lift infants to their cheeks. I bent down to them and fed them. They shall return to the land of Egypt, and Assyria shall be their king, because they have refused to return to me. The sword rages in their cities. It consumes their oracle priests and devours because of their schemes. My people are bent on turning away from me. To the Most High they call, but he does not raise them up at all. How can I give you up, Ephraim? How can I hand you over, O Israel? How can I make you like Adma? How can I treat you like Zeboim? My heart recoils within me. My compassion grows warm and tender. I will not execute my fierce anger. I will not again destroy Ephraim, for I am God and no mortal, the Holy One in your midst, and I will not come in wrath. This is the word of the Lord. Well, this is the first time in my life that I've preached on Hosea, which I find surprising. That's the way the lectionary goes. And this then becomes a very, very personal story in ways that you might not expect, which is a very good thing because I think only if something is personal do we ever really begin to understand it. Church itself, as we're gathered here this morning, can be a very interesting and a very revealing place. Now, this is by no means the only place where heaven and earth meet. And it's not the only place where we talk about the connection between us and God. I think barbershops can serve that purpose too. But it is one place where different generations gather to intentionally hear age-old stories of those who have gone before us. It's a place where we hear stories that we otherwise would surely not encounter. Time-tested tales of lessons learned from the past for our own education and edification, retold so that we might not go through the travails that our ancestors did. Or if we begin to do that, then we know a lesson that we should be learning along the way. Lessons that might help us be faithful in ways that others fell short. That, I think, is one big reason we gather here together. If this sounds interesting to you, then do I have a story for you today? It's all about the prophet Hosea from the 8th century BC. His is said to be the most personal, heartfelt, and even heartbreaking story of all of the prophets of Israel. His is the first book of the collection called the Minor Prophets, whose writing span a period of more than 60 years, and he is the only prophet of his time who left behind any writings at all. The political backdrop of his life's work took place through the reign of Jeroboam II, leading up to the fall of the northern kingdom to the Assyrians in 722. Since, as they say, hindsight is always 20/20, we have the advantage of knowing that Hosea's prophecies would indeed come to pass. But even more significant to us now is the means by which his message was delivered. It was not so much by public announcements that his message was made plain to the people, but through the life that he lived that the word of the Lord was delivered. The drama of the presentation of his messaging makes us sit up and pay attention in ways that we otherwise would not, for it was through his family life that the message was delivered. As the Jewish scholar Abraham Heschel tells us, we know from his use of language that Hosea was well acquainted with agricultural life as a farmer. He was somehow associated with the priesthood and sanctuaries. He was also a lover of the desert and was an expert on lions and panthers and bears. Yet in a time and place long before CNN or Fox News, it was the scandal of his family life that was the vehicle for his message. It was so dramatic that it still retains shock value for us today, believe you me. Hosea had three children, and their names were chosen by the God of Israel. Each name had a particular significance and dramatic meaning to them. The first, a son, was named Jezreel, which was the name of the valley where a horrible massacre had taken place, which was sort of like naming your son Hiroshima or Auschwitz. You know what's being called to mind every time you call out that child's name. The firstborn's name was a warning that God was going to send destruction on the people. The second child, a daughter, was named Lo-Ruhamah, which meant not loved or not pitied. The third child, another boy, was called Lo-Ami, meaning not my people. These children, with their strange, intimidating names, were meant to be walking, talking, living testimonies to Hosea's community that the God of Israel was getting impatient and angry at their unfaithfulness. Every time the children's mother took them to the market and people heard her saying, "Not loved, put those dates back in the bin," it was to remind them that the anger of God was rising against the people of Israel, and that whereas they had once been the chosen people of God, they were now in jeopardy of losing their chosenness, not loved and not pitied by him anymore. But the names of the children were not the most disturbing aspect of how Hosea's family drama reenacted the ways of the people in the eyes of the Lord. It was Hosea's marriage that took the headlines. The mother of these children and Hosea's wife was Gomer, a name in Hebrew which simply means complete, but whose character was very much in question. Obeying the Lord's command, Hosea sought out and married a woman, as Abraham Heschel puts it, of known promiscuous nature. Exactly who Gomer was has been a question for the ages. All we know for sure is that she was a daughter of Diblaim, which really tells us nothing. Whether she was a temple harlot or a woman of the streets seems really to be immaterial at this point. The prophet Hosea's experience with his wife was meant to be a message to the populace that his love for her, consistently rejected and unrequited, was a reenactment of Israel's relationship with the Lord. Gomer continued throughout their marriage to be unfaithful to Hosea, and he continually, painfully, even excruciatingly forgave her. That was his living, consistent message to the people, that is how the Lord would continue to forgive the continual unfaithfulness of the people. That Gomer was perpetually promiscuous and Hosea perpetually, painfully forgiving was a lot of drama for the community to live with. Just imagine this happening within a pastor's household and what the church family would have to say about it. What would the children think, for goodness sake? The continual, improper, commandment-breaking relationship was a daily slap in the face of those in Hosea's community. I am sure, though, that many chose not to make the connection between their own practices of religious promiscuity with their household idols and the awkward and improper relationship going on with a local prophet and his wife. What did they say about people in glass houses? For Hosea's sake, the prophet's experience with his wife was a model of the Lord's love for Israel, whether the people recognized it or not. Just as Hosea could somehow continue to love his unfaithful wife, so also could and would the Lord continue to love Israel. And perhaps, as I have to think Hosea must have imagined it, in some unseen future, as Gomer might someday return in complete faithfulness to Hosea, so might Israel someday return faithful to the Lord. Now, the story of Hosea is one for the ages, but it also can hit home like a ton of bricks in our lives, too. The patience of God knows the pain of waiting. Now, you may or may not already have a similar scenario as Hosea and Gomer rolling around in your heart or your mind right now. My guess is that you most likely do. The ways of the heart are mysterious indeed. The heart has its reasons, which reason knows not, as Pascal put it. If you don't already have a story in mind, here's one for you. It's from a very good friend of mine, whose name I won't share, but it is unfortunately not all that unique. I had a very good visit with one of my friends, one of my oldest friends, just a couple weeks ago. We go back 40 years now, going back to the very first day of seminary in 1979. As we were checking in about our kids and how everybody is doing, his voice quieted when he talked about his son. His two daughters are doing pretty well right now, early in their careers, overcoming some professional hurdles and some relationship issues. But his son, as I've known for a long time now, has had more downs than ups in his young life. He has had addiction issues for a long time, and for years has had a very hard time keeping a steady job. He's been in and out of therapy and treatment centers, and is often down and out as he is on top of the world. This has got to be incredibly excruciating for parents. My friends in particular, who I know very well and love very much. As my friend talked to me about seeing a counselor about this situation, he remarked that he was instructed that it was clearly time for tough love, that money and other resources be withheld, and that it was time for his son to completely go it alone. A long pause ensued. And then he said, "Well, then I might as well just cut off my arm. I can't do that." And all I could say was something like, "Well, that is definitely as tough as it gets," which it is. In an important way, Hosea is a lesson in humility. There is the reality of not being in control of things. Gomer goes her own way, and Hosea hangs in there. He will not let go, come hell or high water. Our particular passage for today recounts the words of a very broken-hearted God who experiences the feelings of a parent. "When Israel was a child, I loved him. The more I called them, the more they went from me. They kept sacrificing to the Baals and offering incense to idols." Hosea is the mouthpiece of a longing and passionate God, but Israel does not listen. When Hosea's words turn from brokenheartedness to warnings of an impending disaster, Israel still does not listen. The storyline of the book of Hosea, not very long, 13 chapters, loses track of Gomer for the sake of the greater whole, and things do not go well for Israel. Whether it was Hosea himself who tracked the destruction of Samaria by the Assyrians, or whether it was another writer who witnessed it at all, Israel's unfaithfulness meant a total national disaster for them. The Lord's faithfulness remained available, but remained untapped. The people continued to rely on false gods and suffered the consequences. Now, you don't necessarily have to believe in God to recognize in the story of Hosea and the waywardness of Israel a parable of human arrogance, a desire for independence or self-control. An I know best attitude that places human desire before God's instruction. In the end, in this story, as we are told, we are Gomer, and Hosea is the Lord, always faithful to us. Today is First Fruits Sunday. And there will be more to be said about this and all these apples up here. Today is the day when we formally begin to recognize God's steadfast love for us through thick and thin. All that we have received comes from God's gracious hand, and we begin to give thanks once again for it today and begin to return what we can to the work of God in our midst. Today we begin to rededicate our lives to God, trusting that God remains ever faithful, even through our distractions and our casual unfaithfulness. We will have a time, as I said, to think about this a little bit more and even act on it. For now, it might be well enough just for us to take it in. This image of a brokenhearted God, longing for our return, waiting with unrequited hope, patiently, expectantly, faithfully. Amen.